Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand, created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
Good morning, I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News, in for Brian Lehrer. It seems like New Jersey's State Attorney General Zulima Farber has political ambitions that keep hitting a road bump. Yesterday's report by a special prosecutor said she violated the state ethics code by showing up on the scene of a traffic stop involving her boyfriend. 3 years earlier, she had her nomination for state Supreme Court nixed when a troubled driving record came to light, and now her conduct on the road has once again led to a major political setback. Before the report came out, even prominent Democrats were joining Republican calls for her resignation. And now that she's resigned, what does this mean for Governor Corzine just 7 months into his term? And how will this affect Zulima's political mentor, Robert Menendez, as he faces a contest for his U.S. Senate seat this fall? With us now to look at the details of the story and all its political implications is WNYC's Bob Hennelly. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, how are you there?
Good. Bob, I know you work out of City Hall, but you're actually a Jersey boy, so this must be especially interesting for you.
Road stops are my specialty.
Okay. Well, Farber stepped down yesterday. Did she admit any wrongdoing?
You know, what's interesting about the press conference that happened after the report was released, it was a joint press conference to promote dignity in the sense that Farber was there with Governor Corzine, and she struck a strangely defiant tone, not dissimilar from that of what we heard from former Governor Jim McGreevy and Bob Torricelli. It's kind of the politician who's breached the public trust as victim. And so it's kind of like, yes, there's been wrongdoing, but it isn't enough for me to really, I'm doing you a favor because I'm such a public servant by leaving.
Rather than put the people through this trauma, I'll step aside. Is that the
precisely
idea?
And then at the same time, what's interesting, in a parallel universe called the working class, the officers, the local patrolman involved in this, and the state trooper who protects her were both given 2 weeks suspension without pay. So she gets a victory lap to the end of the month to be attorney general. And the guys who are actually there facilitating what it is that she appeared to want get 2 weeks without pay.
Let's go through. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Okay.
Let's go through this piece at a time. Break down what happened here. It's kind of complicated. Cops stop Farber's live-in boyfriend named Hamlet Gore, which is a great name, by the way. Hamlet Gore gets stopped at a seatbelt checkpoint. This is part of the click-it-or-ticket campaign. And then they discovered traffic violations. What were the violations, and then what happened?
Well, what happened was this was ironically something the Attorney General had put into place statewide to kind of boost seatbelt use leading up to Memorial Day. So it's that Friday, that getaway Friday.
She herself had ordered these checkpoints.
Exactly. And then, of course, Hamlet had the family van because they've lived together for a number of years in North Bergen. He's headed, and he inside are the things they're going to use for the getaway, including their bikes and some sports equipment, golf clubs, and some documents and some things that are later in this story going to become more relevant. And he's pulled over for a traffic regular click-it-or-ticket stop in Sparky's restaurant and the parking lot. And at that point, the officers ask him for the basic documents. And it turns out, at least initially, they get a report back that his license is suspended, the vehicle is not registered, and there's no insurance. We refer to that as the perfect trifecta. And, of course, out of the fact that he's a person of color, so you have the scene. Apparently, at that point, he reached out for Attorney General Farber, who responded, who came to the scene. The officers involved, while the special prosecutor goes to great lengths to say she did not ask for favors, the fact that she arrived on the scene, apparently with the lights flashing in the state-issued suburban grill, gave one the sense of her authority. She is the chief law enforcement officer of the state. And apparently what happened was the tickets ended up disappearing, and they permitted Hamlet, in a very progressive move of friendly law enforcement, to drive the vehicle that was unregistered back to his home as long as the attorney general in her state-issued car was with him.
Okay, now let's go through that a little bit at a time. The mere fact that she showed up is itself not all that bad of a problem, is it? I mean, if this is the live-in person, you know, their housemates,
that would be, I came to the aid of a loved one, which was what she tried to get across for the first couple of weeks when this thing opened up. I guess the question is, the three ethics code violations deal with the fact that it was the information and the information that was produced in this report shows that she was aware that they had departed from standard roadside procedure and had let this car be driven away, even though it was unregistered, instead of being impounded, which is the normal course. I mean, that's something that you or I, if we're stopped in New Jersey, we won't be driving the car anywhere.
But did she maybe get leaned on a little too hard? The judge who wrote the report said it was her very appearance at the scene that raised what he called serious ethical questions.
Well, you have to read on through the rest of the report, at which point he does lay out the things that she was present for when they departed from standard procedure. Also at the scene was the mayor of the town, whose son — this is a Soprano part of it.
This is quite an event.
Yeah, exactly. The mayor arrives at the scene, and his son is one of the patrolmen involved, and uses that opportunity in true New Jersey pragmatic opportunity to press some kind of matter that he was involved with a friend of his with the medical examiner's board. I mean, the bottom line here is that
he didn't get cited for any ethical violations.
Not at all.
Okay.
The thing here is that you have really a kind of look at how New Jersey works. And I think the problem here is that you see a caste system that jumps out of this, which is the law that you and I have to deal with, and the law that people who are politically connected have to deal with. And if it hadn't been for the fact that Farber had a track record, if she probably would have survived. But remember, this is our third attorney general in a row that's had serious problems.
Oh, I'll ask you about the other two in just a minute. I'm Errol Lewis of the Daily News. I'm sitting in for Brian Lehrer today. We can take calls on this, New Jersey residents especially. How much of a blow do you think the resignation of Zulema Farber is for Governor Corzine after his first 7 months in office? Do you support the attorney general? Do you think she's getting a raw deal? How does this affect your faith in elected officials? Give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. So, Bob, you said this is the third attorney general that's gone out under a cloud?
Well, not out under a cloud, but where their questions about how they conducted themselves while in office hampered their ability to be effective. In the case of Peter Venero, the Republican attorney general under Christy Whitman, he had to say some 300 to 400 times during hearings into racial profiling that he could not recall and did not remember. And actually, the Republicans in that situation came close to impeaching him. They found him so unresponsive to the racial profiling probe, which was headed at the time by Michael Chertoff, ironically. And then also you had Peter Harvey, a Democrat in the McGreevy administration, who was the first attorney general to be sanctioned by the state's ethics committee because right out of the box he took free boxing tickets in New Jersey, which is one of the things that the state attorney general regulates.
I see. Zulema Farber's problems, though, predated this.
Right. And this goes back to a fairly convoluted story of political betrayal that during the McGreevy administration, where she had been floated in the newspaper by unnamed sources as a candidate for the Supreme Court, the highest court in the state. And the political story of it was that their state senators, African-American state senators, said they felt that because an African-American was stepping down, an African-American should be named to the post. Then the front office story was that McGreevy had to pull her because they became aware of the fact just days before the announcement was supposed to be made that she had this problem with her driving record, which was multiple speeding tickets, suspensions of license, and actually a bench warrant, which really set a bad tone. Because in New Jersey, the attorney general is a chief law enforcement officer and is unique constitutionally, along with the secretary of state, at being very independent, and the governor just can't remove her. It's not his pleasure. They have to do it for cause and can even require an impeachment by the legislature to remove her. So it's a very heavy job. In other words, every law enforcement person in the state, including the county prosecutors, report to her. That's why they had to get this retired appellate judge out of retirement to be an independent prosecutor.
So this is different from New York, where we have an elected attorney general who's independent of the governor.
And
is of a different party.
And in fact, this trouble with attorney generals recently has inspired some people to call for that idea of having an elected attorney general statewide, because New Jersey has the most powerful governor, because currently it is the only statewide elected office.
Well, that's right. That came up after McGreevy's resignation, and it comes up every time we talk about how the governor of New Jersey, unlike his 49 colleagues in the other states, is essentially the emperor, right? The
precisely.
The New Jersey governor appoints every attorney general in every county. I mean, every district attorney in every county.
Right. Now, of course, now we will have a little bit of change. Down the line, we will have a lieutenant governor, which will be kind of another person who will be elected statewide, but with the governor. But that we're moving a little bit in the direction of trying to have some kind of independent statewide office holder, and there's also a call for an elected auditor or a state comptroller, which has served New York State so well.
And so as Corzine goes forward, is he going to, do you think this is going to stay with him for a long time?
The problem here is that he appointed her over the objections of people who had his best interest at heart on the inside, because of the fact that she had this troubled record, but she had been a former public defender, a public advocate. She was known as a political person and very capable. So the question was, a lot of people said, well, why not make her your special counsel? And because that's kind of a political job on the inside, and it's not such a fishbowl like the attorney general job, but he put her in. And also, the implications now are the fact that, for instance, you know, she is still going to stay in office until the 31st. We have a heated political season going on with this high-profile Senate race, and the fact that she didn't immediately have to leave is going to become an issue.
Good lawyer, bad driver. Let's take calls. Robert from Ordell, you're on the line. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. This is Rob.
Hi, Rob. Go ahead.
Well, I just thought it's interesting listening to you folks talk. It seems to me New Jersey, as a resident of New Jersey, this is just such an additional embarrassment that it seems we're suffering time after time. And all of these politicians seem to be connected to each other. I read that Zelima Farber has donated over $18,000 to Bob Menendez through the years. And it just seems it's time for wholesale change in the state, even if that means voting out these Democrats entirely. They get to abide by their own set of laws, and it's just not fair, and it's really costing the taxpayers. You brought up the U.S. Senate race, and for once, this time, there's an excellent alternative in Tom Kaine. Here you have a squeaky clean candidate who is running on a platform for change, and then politics as usual in Bob Menendez, and I think this might be the election he goes down, and it probably should be. And I think that this Zelima Farber incident just highlights those ties to individuals with sketchy pasts, and it's just kind of a pay-to-play thing so they can all keep themselves out of trouble. It's really not fair to Joe taxpayer.
Thank you for the call, Rob. I take it that you're a Kaine supporter. But well, talk as a New Jersey resident for a minute. Do you share about the embarrassment?
Well, I think that there is an embarrassment factor, but we have a complication here, which is that in the international scene, it's been identified in the polls that New Jersey residents are very dissatisfied with the Bush administration and are increasingly anxious about the war and what's going on. You know, this local action in Iraq, now we have a shooting war that goes somewhere from Afghanistan to the eastern Mediterranean, not exactly downsizing. So it's kind of a dynamic tension, if you will, between this history and legacy of corruption within the local Democratic Party and New Jersey residents' growing dissatisfaction with what's going on nationally and the sense that they might want to send them. I guess it depends on where they want to send a message most, Trenton or Washington.
Well, Farber, as the caller suggested, is the political protege of another prominent Hispanic figure in New Jersey politics, and that happens to be Robert Menendez. Is he a big player on this international question about the Iraq war?
Well, he was really distinguished in the House in terms of the progressive side, was very much against the war, and he would be very much aligned with Senator Corzine, Governor Corzine, who was one of the 20-some-odd Democrats who voted against the war resolution. So it is a fairly small universe, which now looks pretty good in light of the current political circumstance. On the other hand, on the flip side, you have a situation where even as the report came out, which was posted on the web, by the way, by the Star Ledger, kudos to them as well, you have Menendez saying that he really was quite soft in his language with Farber, saying he hoped that she would do the right thing as opposed to expressing how he felt about what was documented in this report.
When that language, do the right thing, is there any way to interpret that other than you should step down?
Well, I think that there is in New Jersey for a while, the Democrats, particularly, as I said before, when you look at Torricelli and McGreevy, the language of it is there is no shame in New Jersey. There's the idea that if you have breached the public trust, you do people a favor if you step down. And there's kind of almost a feudal mentality that you should hold on to your office no matter what. And in this case, you know, the fact that Farber took so long to step down, I think it is hurting Corzine, especially when he's trying to reinvent the state with the property tax.
Okay, well, hold that thought, Bob. We're going to talk more about reform and politics in New Jersey. I'm Merrill Lewis of the Daily News, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. You're listening to WNYC. I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. We're talking with WNYC's City Hall reporter, Bob Hennelly, about the political fallout of New Jersey's Attorney General Zulema Farber stepping down and what it means for New Jersey Democrats. Bob, New Jersey Republicans have been calling for Farber's resignation for weeks, and even some Democrats were outspoken in their criticism, particularly State Senator John Adler, who's the chair of the Judiciary Committee that oversees Farber's confirmation. How much of a political liability was this really getting to be for Corzine, both from Democrats and Republicans?
Well, the Republicans are fairly marginal right now because they're in the minority in both houses, and they haven't, you know, Corzine won by a significant amount in the last race. What was important, I think, was Senator John Adler from Southern Jersey Democrat, after the report came out, I'd say within an hour of it being posted, came out with an unequivocal statement that she had to leave, which is the kind of clarity that we didn't see in the McGreevy episode. You may remember that went on like a bad George Raft movie where politicians didn't know where to come down on it. They didn't want to be considered homophobic. And McGreevy basically used the whole gay thing to hide his malfeasance in office, successfully, might I, because he'll be on a book tour pretty soon. In this case, for Corzine, it comes at a time when he had just shut down the state government along with the legislature in this really unprecedented dysfunction over the budget. So this isn't the first thing that's happened, the first bump along the road. And he's in the process now of trying to shepherd through this special session of the legislature to reinvent the way New Jersey taxes itself and pays for public education, which is a heavy lift. So every day that is spent leading up into the political race in November discussing this and going back over it costs him time in getting out his message affirmatively.
Was that the same logic that led Senator Adler to come out so quickly?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't have a chance to interview him. I read the statement that came out. I'm sure that there was a sense whenever there's a void of leadership, people who are opportunistic will step in. And that's what politics is all about.
Well, we have a clip of Governor Corzine from his press conference with Zulema Farber yesterday giving the reasons for her stepping down. Let's listen.
She has decided to do more than might ordinarily be required for a lapse in judgment and to make a larger personal sacrifice for the greater good. And let me be clear, this is her decision. Public service, perhaps especially in New Jersey in the current era, requires a willingness to make sacrifices. People give up larger incomes, they forgo time with their families, they endure long hours, and they put their reputations at risk. The pressure is significant, it's constant.
What do you make of how the governor framed it there?
A politician is victim. I mean, I think that what he had to do there was cast it as something that was a choice on her part, which gave it a sense of volition so that he could try to give her some kind of moral momentum, which, according to the report, she clearly lacked when she was at the roadside at this local traffic stop. And it also preserves appearances. I mean, I think that's the thing that's most important. For instance, let's look at another scenario. Supposing he had just, asked for her resignation quietly and confidentially, and then she issued the release, there would not have been this photo op opportunity. And as again, I started this segment pointing out, compare this with the experience of the trooper who is, protects her and the local law enforcement officers who were present merely thinking they were doing the right thing for the chief law enforcement officer who were given 2 weeks suspension without pay. And she's going to get to stay in office for a victory lap until the 31st. It creates the optics are problematic. Because it's almost as if she did nothing wrong and she's leaving to do the state of New Jersey a favor, almost like she's still a public servant.
Well, how much were they at fault, do you think?
Well, looking at the report and looking at the transcript when you go back and forth, it's clear that they were doing what they thought was required of them. And the fact that the Attorney General was present for the decision to let the car be driven away as opposed to being impounded. I mean, this is a person who's very savvy. She had been someone who was a public defender. She understands how law enforcement works. And indeed, sadly, she was very effective with the gang effort, anti-gang eradication. In just 6 months, she had done some significant things. So it is a loss for the state that, again, this inattention to detail, this sense of being other than the average person. And this is something that afflicts New Jersey politicians. Maybe it afflicts all politicians. You would know better than I. But it seems that this is something that they have that's built into the system. They aren't aware of how things appear and the power they bring when they show up with their position in power in tow.
Oh, I think they're quite aware of it. They're, you know, when in fact, listening to the governor talking about how it's hard work, it reminded me of Bush saying that. It's hard work, long hours, you got
to
come in
as
on
as opposed
weekends.
To an honor. You exactly hit it exactly right. This is a great honor to serve, and it's a great betrayal of the public trust when people do these kinds of things, and rather than own up to it publicly, they continue people's cynicism by not dealing with it in a forthright fashion.
I'm Errol Lewis of the Daily News sitting in for Brian Lehrer. We are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. We're especially interested in hearing from our Jersey listeners, and we have one on the line, Richard from Jersey City. Good morning.
Good morning. I think this once again shows that John Corzine is standing up to the Democratic machine. In a one-party state, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, you're going to have the whole concept of machine and insider dealings. But Corzine, through his efforts in the budget crisis and this, is showing that in a very intelligent, finesse way, he knows how to stand up to it. He's going to come out looking ahead again, in my opinion.
Okay, thank you for the call. We have some partisans out here. What do you think?
Well, the one thing that I think that he did do that was adept and showed solid judgment was appointing an independent prosecutor, because that was fairly unprecedented. That created an opportunity for an objective observer, and he had staff, by the way. And by the way, Judge Williams should actually give tutorials in Washington, because this special prosecutor wrapped it up in 3 weeks. In that case, by Corzine doing that, he did create a process that was transparent, and for that, I think he's going to get kudos from good government types.
Gene from Rockland County, you're on the line. Good morning.
Hello. My father used to be the administrator of Bergen County, and I think one of the things to touch upon is the fact that Corzine came as, first of all, as a senator and as a person who had been in charge of Goldman Sachs. Now he's in a situation where Bergen County alone has 70 different towns. There's like over 500 municipalities that you have to answer to when you're over there, and politics gets to be very, very local when you're in New Jersey. But yet at the same time, here he is, that he actually has presidential ambitions. So Corzine, you know, as far as when I was listening to his, response to how she was leaving, I see that he's extremely reluctant to look like he's playing a heavy when it comes to a Hispanic, because he's really very much courting the Hispanic vote, both here in the state and hopefully and a nationwide point. And if that had been a white male who was the attorney general and done the same thing, I have no doubt that he would have canned him on the spot.
Well, you know what, Gene? Let me ask you this: your father, who I take might have been was or is a white male, put yourself in back in his job, you know, in managing Bergen County, and put yourself in the position of this sort of traffic stop. Do you think that's something that might have happened? Administrators?
Perfect analogy. My father, one time he was actually, before he became administrator, he was actually council president of a town cloister, and the police were threatening to strike and all this stuff. My father was able to laugh at them and said, look, you want to strike? Go ahead. You know, within an hour, I'll have county police here taking your place. Within, you know, a few hours, I'll have state police. Within, you know, the day I'll have National Guard here, whereas if you're a garbage man, I guess can get nobody else to come in to replace you. The garbage man I'm worried about, the police I'm not.
Okay. Thank you for the call.
Time, the police...
That was a good story.
Good story. How's the political culture evolving? I think that's really kind of the question here. He's talking about sort of an earlier age. It doesn't sound all that different from what happened out on that road stop.
Well, I guess the thing is that, you know, if you look at the fact that we're in a state, believe it or not, of national emergency, where you have so many young people in the National Guard serving overseas, giving their life. And so you'd almost like to see a change of the politics at home, Errol. You know what I mean? Like some sense of national purpose. And unfortunately, Democrat or Republican, it still doesn't seem to be there.
And Menendez, what now happens for him? I mean, Governor Corzine may or may not have presidential ambitions. I'm not sure I would agree with Gene about that. But Menendez is kind of a go-go guy.
Well, exactly. And he's had a kind of steady rise, I might add, building on his reputation as a corruption fighter. He makes much of the fact that he testified against a mentor of his, former mayor of Union City, State Senator Musto. And he always includes in his biography how he had to wear a bulletproof vest and face, you know, potential dangers because of standing up to corruption. For him, as I again, it really depends on how upset are the people of New Jersey about what's happening globally versus what's happening locally. And can he how does he exploit those tensions?
Yeah, I haven't been following this race very closely. Is this a contested? Is this a sharp contest?
Well, there's some polls that show that Kane has a couple of points on him. It's still, what's amazing about it is it's not Labor Day, and these guys are going at each other full time. This is really kind of the end of the campaign cycle that played mercy on all of us. They're starting well before Labor Day, and they're going each other in a very personal way.
Are there ads flooding the airwaves?
Not yet, but this is still the kind of agitprop where they're showing up at places to do press conferences. Menendez, for instance, has been trying to use Tom Kane Jr.'s relationship with his father in the sense of Tom Kane Sr. has been quite critical of the Bush administration about not funding and following through on the recommendations of the 9/11 panel. Menendez has been hitting that very hard.
Is this a nationalized race or the national?
Oh, it is. It is one of the ones that is being looked at because of the stature of Tom Kane Sr. and his son and the fact that Menendez, of course, is, of course, a major Democratic figure in his own right, irrespective of his racial or ethnic identity. And it's also, I think, an opportunity to talk about what's happening with the war in terms of how people at the grassroots feel about it.
I think today is the day President Bush is speaking in Pennsylvania, where there's another contested Senate race. But
hot House races too.
But I think it flashed through my mind just driving in as I was listening to it that he might be coming near the New Jersey border, where you can sort of get a twofer and bleed into
the southern market.
Into
that's
the southern
true.
TV market.
I mean, one of the things that though that Tom Kane has to be very careful about. You may remember that there was a fundraiser early on with Vice President Cheney, where Kane was mysteriously stuck in traffic and unable to join the vice president. That's a very delicate dance in terms of he has to appear loyal to the president in a time of crisis for the base, but at the same time look like he's independent enough that he could come up with an original thought when clearly we need a plan B.
I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News. You're listening to 93.9 and AM 820 WNYC. I'm talking with WNYC's Bob Henley about the political fallout from the Attorney General in New Jersey, Zulima Farber, stepping down. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Shelley from West Orange, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. As I listen to the people who are calling in and to Bob Henley, it becomes really apparent to me that this is really just a political shyster job. I mean, frankly, if Zulima Farber was doing a great job as an attorney, and in all of her other legal positions, the fact that she's rushing to get from place to place, which I'm sure is what is expected of, you know, people who are in those kind of positions, is not any kind of a reflection on her political ethics or her personal ethics. I mean, I myself have been stopped. I actually wasn't stopped. I was parked badly. The officer happened to see that my car wasn't registered. He didn't impound my car. It was clear that I had just forgotten it or that something had slipped up. It was clear that I hadn't stolen the car. So to expect that, you know, somebody who is clearly not of criminal intent and who really was coming to the aid of a loved one is now going to have to take these kind of political slugs at her whole career and at her character, to me, is absolutely shameful. I see Republican politicians doing things that truly are to the disadvantage of the public and cost the public not only financially, but also as far as what our civil rights concern. You know, the what's going on with abortion is another example. I won't go that far into it, but I really feel I'm listening to this, and this is just BS.
Okay.
It's, you know, making a mountain out of a molehill.
And you feel the Attorney General should have gotten at least as good of a deal as you got when they found you without your registration.
Absolutely. You know, and they probably had the registration at home. You know, but I mean, this is stupid to be impacting somebody's public career, the public service that she obviously has done in the past, and then to, you know, basically what's the word, disintegrate, you know, whatever future service she could do on such a flimsy, stupid, trumped-up thing.
I thank you for the call, Shelley.
One of the things that's interesting is that statewide, New Jersey put great emphasis after Acting Governor Cody put in place ethics standards, and they're truly trying to exact from all 78,000 state employees a new regime in terms of ethics. And the Corzine administration came in saying that it was going to set a new standard and a higher bar. So that's part of it. Then also, you have to look at the fact that often in New Jersey, as we painfully know, traffic stops have been used as a pretense historically for racial profiling. This has been documented. The state police had to be under a special monitor for that. I think the question here is, she certainly could have had it handled without showing up at the scene, and she was unaware of the role that her presence would play in the scene, especially with the state trooper in tow as her driver. I mean, as Judge Williams said in his report, once she arrived on the scene in that official capacity, her appearance took on a new reality.
I guess she might have been speeding if she'd come on her own, so maybe she was trying to avoid more trouble. What do you think is her legacy, short though it may have been, in 7 months as Attorney General? I mean, you mentioned that she implemented this
anti-gang initiative.
And the traffic stops as well. Tell us more about the anti-gang.
Well, the anti-gang violence, New Jersey is in the midst of a real crisis. Talk about Homeland Security. We have this major uptick that's counter to the national trend of higher murder rate going up in our six principal cities, and much of it related to gangland violence. And you have a situation where a third of the arrests related to concealed weapons and handguns are young people under 18, which raises significant questions about what's going on. And these kids are getting recruited at younger and younger ages. And she seemed to come to the table with an understanding of the multidisciplinary requirements to get her arms around this. And so she also was trying to restore momentum because that was lost under Peter Harvey, an attorney general, because he had stuck out his term but was always under this ethical cloud and so was never able to be as effective as many of his supporters thought he would be.
Is there any early line on who might become the next attorney general?
No, it's interesting. I've heard from sources that Stuart Rabner, who was the special counsel, he had been a career crime fighter in the U.S. Attorney's Office under Chris Christie and thought that he was going to go and be attorney general. Somehow at the last minute, he ended up being made special counsel to the governor, which is more of a political job. And what's going to happen now? They have until September 1st. They say she's going to be there. It's something where he's going to really have to pick somebody who is above and beyond reproach. He has no political capital in this one department to spend.
Between September 1st and the election in November.
Certainly, he'll have to have somebody in place.
He wouldn't just let the first deputy continue as the
acting? That's hard to call. I mean, I think that it might... one of the things in terms of from a PR standpoint, if it's someone of real stature, there'll be all those lovely stories about how great the pick was, which moves us into the narrative past Lima Farber. And that's where we want to go if we're John Corzine.
And they'll be calling on you to help write that story, no doubt.
Well, we'll see.
Well, when we come back, we're going to be talking with Brooklyn teenagers about changes in the borough's neighborhoods. We're also going to be talking later on today about immigration courts. We're going to be talking about immigration law. We're going to be talking about reports on new immigrants. All of these new things will be coming up, and I imagine you'll be part of those stories as well. Bob,
let's go for a drive in New Jersey.
Well, I may take you up on that. For now, Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News. I'm sitting in for Brian Lehrer. You're listening to 93.9 and AM 820 WNYC. We're also online at WNYC.org. Stay tuned.
Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.